Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th Canto, Chapter Number 3, Text Number 19.
Na etat purva rishaya chakru na karishyanti cha apare nirambhu dharayat anam kaha vai divya sama shatam Naitat purvarshayas chakrur Nakarishyanti chapare Nirambur dharayat pranam Kobai divya samashatam
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Even saintly persons like Bhrigu, born previously, could not perform such severe austerities, nor will anyone in the future be able to do so. Who within these three worlds can sustain his life even without drinking water for 100 celestial years? So these are, again, Brahmaji is speaking to Aranyakashipu. Purport, it appears that even if a yogi does not drink a drop of water, he can live for many, many years by the yogic process, though his outer body be eaten by ants and moths. Om Ajnana Timananda Shaganandjana Shalakya Chakshur Unmiritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, these yogis are very, very powerful. They can do this. As we mentioned yesterday, even in recent history, one devotee in our temple in Gainesville, when I was there back in the 70s, he had just recently come back from India, and he read in the newspaper that there was some yogis who were very, very angry. They had buried themselves underground. They were completely buried underground, and they were doing yogic meditation there. And they figured they wouldn't be disturbed. Then someone came along to build a building there, and the bulldozers came in, or whatever they used, and they dug up the yogis by accident. And they were so angry their meditation had been broken. So even today there are yogis who have great powers. But this type of meditation is not really suitable for the general population. Only very rare persons can undergo the necessary austerities. And even if you were to undergo the austerities, Brahmaji says actually only Hiranyakashipu could perform this degree of austerity. But even if we do some yogic austerities, then what will we gain by it? We may get some siddhis. We might be able to convince some people that we're God by our siddhis. But what do we gain? We become simply more implicated in the laws of karma. So, just as the body of Hiranyakashipu was eaten away by the insects, I cannot live without water. Even as the body of Hiranyakashipu was eaten away by the insects, we should try to have our bodily conception eaten away by transcendental knowledge. So that's a nice poetic simile for us as we are bhakti yogis. For us, let the eating away process be the exposure to the process of Krishna consciousness, transcendental knowledge, devotional service, the holy names. Because this bodily conception is a very big problem for us. It's an extremely difficult problem. Very difficult. We're thinking, I'm a man, I'm a woman, and now we see a big thing coming up. Someone thinks someone's in a man's or a woman's body, but they think actually, even though I'm in a man's body, I'm actually a woman, or a woman is thinking I'm actually a man. this transgenderism that is now coming up more in the Kali Yuga. Even in the Kali Yuga, genderism becomes, that's not clearly defined. So everything becomes topsy-turvy in this age. But we don't realize that we have nothing to do with either of these genders. You see, we shouldn't be hung up about I'm a this or I'm a that, or I'm a this who's thinking that they're that, or whatever. We should come to the actual liberated position. And the more we can actually be exposed to transcendental knowledge, sometimes people say, well, why do we have to hear this again and again and I'm not the body? They find it hackneyed. But that means they have no realization. Because someone who is actually advanced in Krishna consciousness relishes every single syllable of Vedic wisdom as the sweetest nectar, the ultimate gulab jamun of the consciousness. Psychic gulab jamun. The psyche becomes super enlivened and stimulated by every single syllable of Vedic wisdom. So much so as we see with our great acharya of hearing, Parikshit Maharaj. He could sit for 7 days and not be disturbed and be absolutely completely enlivened. Even though he knew he was going to die, he was not afraid. He was just absolutely in total bliss. So this is the art that we need to cultivate, as we've been explaining recently. Prabhupada is pointing out in the Bhagavad Gita introduction that of all the 9 processes of bhakti, hearing from a realized soul is the easiest thing. If you can find a person who's highly realized in Krishna consciousness, if you can sit and hear from them, that hearing is the easiest access point to the Krishna net, the world of Krishna, to Krishna and his transcendental kingdom. That is the easiest access point. And if there is static in that hearing, as we've been discussing previously as well, if we find that there is static that's keeping us away from being ecstatic, then we simply have to intensify that hearing just like a laser beam. So if we can actually laser focus our hearing propensity, laser focus it finer and finer and refine it and refine it more and more and more and more laser focused, that can actually burn a hole through the coverings of this material world, where Krishna will actually be able to pull us out of this through the power of hearing. So this hearing process is of the utmost importance. This is how we have come to Krishna consciousness, by hearing and by, of course, prasadam. Actually, Prabhupada said that in Miami. He said, you have all come to this movement by prasadam. And then Abhiram Prabhu was the temple president at that time. So he said, you too, Abhiram? Abhiram said, yes, Prabhupada. So actually this prasadam is bringing us all. And after taking prasadam, then we become enlivened to hear something about Krishna. It's like we see how the restaurant is potent like that. Someone can come, take prasadam. They become purified by taking prasadam, and they're eager to read a book or hear what a devotee has to explain to them about our philosophy. So that prasadam can prime the pump of the hearing process, which is actually the real way that we can easily and quickly advance along the pathway of Krishna bhakti. We have to hear our rounds very nicely. We have to hear our older prabhus preaching to us. And we also have to be very kind to preach to those who are not on our level, those who are less advanced than us. We should be very kind to them and try to help them come up to a higher level. And then with those who are equal, we should become Krishna Gita buddies. Mach chita mad gita prana bodhiyantak parasparam katayantascha mamti. They are always enlivened by the devotees of the Lord, are constantly enlivened by hearing and chanting my glories. They are very enlivened by this process. They enlighten one another. In this way, it's described in the Bhagavad Gita. This process of Krishna Katha is the supreme nectar. If we take it very seriously, that I can always be absorbed in Krishna Katha, day in and day out, minute by minute, hour by hour, somehow or other, always be connected with this process of Krishna Katha. This will bring us to the perfectional stage very, very quickly. Why should we be unnecessarily, foolishly holding ourselves back from spiritual advancement and suffering unnecessary disturbance of the mind, anxieties? If we simply take this process of Krishna Katha very seriously, then the flesh and blood of material consciousness will be eaten away by these, by this wonderful process, and the pure spirit soul will remain. Instead of Hiranyakashipu, just ended up with the bones. You see. But if we engage in this hearing and chanting process very, very nicely, then all this crud of ahankar will be eaten away, and the pure spirit soul then will come out. The pure spirit soul is there within everyone. Actually, everyone's a pure devotee right now. It's just covered. Your pure bhakti is already there. It is just covered by so many layers, millions and millions of lifetimes of accumulation of so much lust, so much anger, so much greed. So, but if we, in this, for just one lifetime, we can take this process very seriously. In one lifetime, we can burn off all this crud and become reinstated in our swarup, our eternal identity as the servant of Krishna. Is there anything more worthwhile than this? Isn't that what we're here for? We should never forget why we're here. This should not be, as Prabhupada one time explained, some so-called devotees in India, they had their ashram is simply a common mess. It's like in the military, they have the mess hall. It doesn't mean you're supposed to make it a mess. It refers to like a common eating place, the mess hall. So they would make the ashram simply a facility for common mess, where everyone gets together and eats and shares the meals. And that was the whole basis of their ashram. So Prabhupada wanted us to make sure that we did not make our temple simply some, you know, facility for common eating. This is a facility for common hearing and chanting. That's the real point. This should be a place where we're all, not that, you know, that for Prasadam everybody's there, fired up, ready, punctual. But when there's a hearing and chanting going on, well, everyone, you know, kind of like here and there and everywhere, but not here, like we saw last night. Even this morning, I went down to access the internet, and there was a boy sleeping in the room, and he missed Mangal Arati, and I said, make sure to come for class, and I see that he didn't come for class either, even though he spent the night here at the temple. So Prabhupada always said this should not be a free hotel. Now, even if he can't even come here to class, then he might as well just sleep in the bushes somewhere in the park. He shouldn't come here to sleep. He's not willing to hear the Bhagavatam class. Even after he was woken up. Not that he said, well, I slept through it. You see, he was woken up. He could have easily come. So we have to make this the ISKCON Center is a place where hearing and chanting is the center. Where we all come together enlivened to share our realizations about Krishna consciousness, to dive into the nectar of Sankirtan together, just go deeply and deeply and deeply into the kirtan. Not when will the kirtan be over so I can take breakfast. No, but just dive into the kirtan with so much absorption that we could actually go on chanting for millions of years and forget about everything else. You see, go that deeply into kirtan. Of course, we have our duties, but I'm saying we should get so much into the kirtan that we could just go on for millions of years diving deeper and deeper and deeper into the bliss of the holy names. That's the spirit, that's the mood that we should cultivate and try to develop within our heart, because that's where the bliss is in Krishna consciousness. It's not having a nice quarters in the ashram. It's not having some money so you can get some health food or something like that. The real relishing of Krishna consciousness is to come together in the association of devotees and just dive unlimitedly deep into that sweet nectar of hearing and chanting in the association of devotees. That's the essence of our Krishna consciousness movement. So we should never lose sight of what we're here for. We're here to hear and chant the glories of the Lord in the association of devotees. That's the whole purpose of our being here, not for any other reason. And if we keep that in the forefront of our consciousness, and ourselves just really, really deeply, deeply relish this wonderful ecstatic activity of being together with devotees and hearing and chanting the glories of Krishna, then I can assure you the whole world will become attracted to our Krishna consciousness movement. Because nowhere is there any nectar like this. This is called deathless nectar. Anyone who can actually taste this nectar of Krishna's holy names achieves immortality. The greatest fear that everybody has in the material world is death. But someone who can actually experience what is this Hare Krishna, what it actually is, they become absolutely fearless of death. They enter into immortality. As Prabhupada said, someone who has actually tasted the nectar of the name of Krishna, who has really tasted it, has really realized what is this Hare Krishna. For them, death means you simply go to sleep and you wake up with Krishna. That's all. Just like here in our temple, we do a hard day of service and finally, all right, now it's time to take rest. So just imagine, you, in the same way, you put a whole life of dedicated service to Prabhupada and his mission, to your Guru Maharaj, Prabhupada, put in a whole lifetime of service, and now when you're a little tired, all right, put in a lifetime of service, now I'm tired, I want to take some rest. And then wake up with Krishna. Just imagine, to wake up in Krishna's pastimes. You see. And to be able to find out, what did Mother Jasoda put in Krishna's lunch bag today? Does he have sandesh this morning? What kind of sandesh does he have in his lunch bag this morning? Just imagine to be able to actually wake up in Krishna's pastimes. You know, as a cowherd boy or a cowherd girl, as a cow or a flute or a rock that Krishna can sit on when he takes his lunch. Just imagine we can actually wake up at the end of this lifetime. We just put one lifetime, in spite of whatever impurities and imperfections we may have, we just remain dedicated to serving this wonderful mission of Prabhupada. Then we'll simply go to sleep and we'll wake up with Krishna. That's all. No more anxiety. Haven't we had enough anxiety? Haven't we had our fill of anxiety? Then why are we still running after anxiety? Foolishly running after, give me more anxiety, more anxiety. If you want anxiety, then take transcendental anxiety. You know what Prabhupada says in one of his purports in the Bhagavatam? He says, a Krishna conscious being is always thinking how to deliver all of suffering humanity back to Godhead. And even if he is not successful, his perfection is guaranteed, and anyone who follows him will also become perfect. So, I ask you this question. Are we supposed to be Krishna conscious? Or not? We are supposed to be Krishna conscious beings. So the actual definition of a Krishna conscious being is a person who is always thinking how to deliver all the suffering humanity back to Godhead. So we can see how Krishna conscious, how un-Krishna conscious we are. Because we're just thinking about so many other things. About our own situation. Unfortunately, that's our position. We're thinking about our own situation instead of, you know, how can I live this day for the greatest benefit for the fallen conditioned souls on this planet? How can I benefit them in the best possible way today to help them back to home, back to Godhead? This is one of Bhaktivinoda Thakura's prayers. Bhaktivinoda, taking our position of a fallen jiva, he says, when will that day be mine when I will set out to preach the divine command? When will that day be mine? He's putting himself in our position that right now I'm caught up in, you know, material affairs. But when will that day come when I really take seriously delivering the fallen conditioned souls? That's the very, that song, Kabe Habe Bolo Sedi Namra. The very last, the very end of the song, he's praying that way. The very conclusion of the song. When will I set out to preach the command divine? When, oh, when will that day be mine? So even if we don't feel that way right now, even if we're not on that level yet, which certainly we are not, we can hanker to come to that level where we're fully dedicated to that at every minute, in all times, all places, all circumstances, with every thought, with every word and every deed, we're doing everything we possibly can do to benefit all the fallen conditioned souls within this planet. You see? By doing so, as Prabhupada explains in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya is in great anxiety about seeing so many fallen souls caught up in this material existence. Prabhupada is explaining that a devotee who takes up this anxiety of spreading Krishna consciousness, they are actually relieving Lord Chaitanya of some of his transcendental anxiety. They're taking some of the burden off his shoulder onto their shoulders. And they become very, very dear to Lord Chaitanya. So if we can strive and endeavor like this, to think how I can benefit the fallen conditioned souls, how I can dedicate my life for pushing for this preaching movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then we will become very, very dear to the Lord, very, very dear to Prabhupada, very, very dear to our Guru Maharaj, very, very dear to the Vaishnavas. It doesn't matter what our position is in the society. It doesn't matter. Any person who takes up very seriously this process of spreading Krishna consciousness becomes a powerful Krishna conscious leader. I don't care whether they have an official position or not. By dint of their sincere desire to push forward this movement, they become a powerful spiritual leader on this planet. So we should all try to become, as Prabhupada always talked about, the pillars of ISKCON. We should all try to become a pillar that's holding up, just like here, you have some pillars holding up the ceiling, you see. So each one of us should try to become a pillar. They're doing our share to help this movement be successful. Prabhupada always gave the example of Indian railways. He said they had one poster that every employee must see that the wheels on the train are turning. So everyone in the company was given that instruction. You have to make sure the wheels of the train is rolling down the track. That is your duty. Every single employee had to meditate like that in the company Indian Railways. One person is actually sitting there in the engine, you know, turning the throttle, and someone else is a clerk signing a paper in an office. But someone else is, you know, sweeping. But everyone's duty is to make sure that train is rolling. So in the same way, every member of ISKCON has that duty to make sure that this movement is successful. Whether that means cleaning the toilet, whether that means distributing a book, whether that means washing some dishes, whether that means working a job and giving as much money as I can so that support the temple. Whatever it means for each individual, everyone should do everything they possibly can, sacrifice every amount of energy they possibly can to see that the wheels on the train are turning. To see that Lord Chaitanya's movement, which is manifested now in the form of ISKCON, is inundating the entire planet Earth. So if we can do this, and I guarantee you the flesh and blood of the Hankara, which has kept us suffering birth after birth, will be eaten away in a much better way than Hiranyakashipu had his flesh and blood eaten away by the ants and moths. So, are there any questions? Yes?
How do we make the balance? Because we've seen ourselves and other devotees tiring when we're, you know, like too much thinking about others and forgetting our own sadhana.
Yeah.
You know.
Physician, heal thyself. If you want to be a physician, that's very nice, but your first duty is to keep yourself strong and healthy, otherwise you will not have any potency. Our first duty is our own internal cultivation. We have to make our own sadhana very strong. We have to be regularly attending the programs, regularly chanting our rounds, guarding ourselves against lusty thoughts, angry thoughts, greedy thoughts. We have to cultivate pure devotional service. That's the first step. Prabhupada said that there's nothing more important than spreading Krishna consciousness, but even more important is saving yourself. So to actually spread Krishna consciousness, you yourself must become very spiritually strong. So your first duty is to make yourself very strong spiritually. Very, very strong. Just imagine if somehow or other every devotee on this movement left their body and you were the only devotee left. Only Prabhupada and Nuga left on this planet. You see? Then you have to be so strong and so pure in your sadhana that you could influence this entire planet to take shelter of Prabhupada. So everyone should be thinking to make themselves that strong and potent in their own personal sadhana. That if somehow or other every devotee went back to Godhead and I was the only one left, it would be my duty to keep this movement going. You see? So we have to be, each one of us should take a very serious, responsible attitude, not to think, well, the other devotees will do it and I'll just kind of, you know, hang around and be a quasi-surrendered soul. No, should not do that. Each one of us should become exemplary. Each one of us should become a pure devotee on the highest possible level we can achieve within this lifetime. We should strive for the absolute perfection, each and every one of us. And then when we preach, it'll be very, very powerful, it'll be very, very potent. Krishna Das Kaviraj says, one pure devotee can deliver the entire universe. And as we pointed out the other day, Prabhupada said, if one devotee can purely chant the holy names, and by his influence, the whole world will take up Krishna consciousness. So, you cannot simply externally engage in busily trying to spread Krishna consciousness while keeping yourself contaminated within the heart. That won't work. You have to purify your own heart very seriously. And then whatever you do will be very effective. Why endeavor to spread Krishna consciousness and keep yourself impure? That's called active foolish. But to become very, very pure and then preach Krishna consciousness, where it will be more effective, that's called lazy intelligence. If I can purify myself, become very, very pure in my own sadhana, then whatever preaching I do will be highly effective. So that's, instead of having to endeavor like anything with very little results, let me just purify myself, and then whatever endeavor I make will be very potent. You see, this is lazy intelligence. So each one of us should be lazy intelligent in that way. For our preaching, we should become very, very pure, very, very dedicated to Guru and Krishna. And in this way, whatever we do will be effective. It may take time for that to manifest. Even Prabhupada himself did not, in the beginning, the results did not come in the beginning for Prabhupada. Look what happened in Jhansi. Look what happened that first year in New York City. But he never gave up his determination that I must serve my Guru Maharaj's order, you see. That's what it boils down to. Prabhupada explains in his purport in the Srimad Bhagavatam that you do not, Krishna is not to be found in the bushes of Vrindavan. Krishna is to be found in the order you receive from your spiritual master. That's where we'll find Krishna. So we have to understand how can I please my spiritual master? What will please him? What does he want me to do? See, understand, what will please my Guru Maharaj? Let me do that. Take that as your worshipable deity, knowing what your Guru Maharaj wants you to do, and then do that. And that's how you'll be highly successful. Questions more? Yes.
How is that considered lazy intelligence?
Well, and Prabhupada told us that lazy intelligence is the first class position. So how is it lazy intelligence that by becoming very pure in Krishna consciousness I can accomplish much more than if I just keep myself impure, you know, I neglect my sadhana, I neglect my japa, and then try to work very hard to spread Krishna consciousness. The point is that you'll, by using your intelligence, you'll be able to accomplish a lot more. Without, you may endeavor like anything, foolishly, that I want to spread Krishna consciousness, but you know, you don't follow the principles strictly, you don't chant your rounds. That's active foolishness. You understand? That by being intelligent and doing things in the proper way, with less endeavor, you can accomplish much more. That's the point. If you foolishly do things, then you may work very hard, but the result will not be very good. Is it clear now? It doesn't mean we should become lazy, but it means we should engage ourselves in such a way that whatever we do is highly, highly effective. And that comes to the degree of our purity, how much we become pure in our practice of Krishna consciousness. Questions more? Only women ask questions? Yes. Person what?
Physician, heal thyself. So if we have to think ourselves.
It has to correlate with what?
Physician, heal thyself.
Physician, heal thyself. The physician wants to go to the epidemic area and he wants to save the people who are suffering from the epidemic. But he knows if it were to be effective, he has to himself be healthy. If he is himself a victim of the epidemic, then he will not be able to help those who are suffering from the epidemic. He has to be strong and healthy himself. So for the sake of being able to save others, he first of all makes sure that he's saved, that he's healthy.
By trying to help others, they become healed also in the proper
way. They become?
They become successful. So while preaching, they cannot become successful.
What is it? So you're saying, I don't have to chant rounds, I don't have to follow the principles, I just preach, and I'll be successful just by preaching. You're saying, you're asking if that could be the case. Well, we see many examples of people who tried to do that, and they didn't make it. I don't want to bring any names, but we have case studies in our history of ISKCON of people who tried to do that. They were interested in having big, big results, and big, big prestige, but their own sadhana was deficient and they didn't make it. They didn't make it. They made it for some time, but then after a while, they were a big ISKCON hero one day and they were in the lap of Maya Devi the next day. So if we really want to be successful in our Krishna consciousness, it has to be based on a solid foundation of purity. Has to be based on a solid foundation of purity. Without the purity, no matter what we do, we may have big, big meetings and big, big conferences, big, big discussions about, expanding Krishna consciousness in this way and expanding it in that way. Just like that, some big meetings are coming up in Dallas this next weekend. But if we neglect the foundation of everything, which is our own personal purity, no matter how many committees we form and how many big, big discussions we may have, this movement's not going to go anywhere. This movement will only grow to the extent that we, the members of it, have cultivated our own personal purity. That's the only extent that this movement will grow, not beyond that. Any other questions? Yes, Prabhu. That shows you the great. That's the fact that sometimes someone may speak in a way that attracts people to chant Hare Krishna, but he himself is not able to maintain it. That shows you the great power of Prabhupada's words. That somehow Prabhupada is actually acting. Because it's Prabhupada's words, just like a FedEx man. He may not be a millionaire, but he can give you a check for $1 million. Of course, to the extent that a person is actually sincerely following himself, there will be more potency and more effect. But the fact is that we know people who are not really practicing Krishna consciousness, but they tell people about it, and people are inspired because the potency of Prabhupada's words can even come through from someone who's not purely following it. We're seeing that many times. Just like I know there was some devotee who was preaching here, and some people joined this temple, and he wasn't even following all the principles, but he was inspiring people to join this temple. He admitted he wasn't fully doing everything, but still he was. So even if someone is not completely purely following everything, this message is so powerful that there can be effect, but the effect will not be nearly as great is someone who is actually following it strictly. Those are the persons who will have the greatest impact on spreading Krishna consciousness.
We have seen that those who follow, they speak less. Those who don't follow, they speak louder. That's what I've been saying all the time so far.
Well, in Bengal, they have a saying that he who knows doesn't speak, and he who speaks doesn't know. But that actually doesn't apply in Krishna consciousness. One Bengali man who became a little inimical to our movement, we visited him and he told us like that. He who speaks doesn't know, and he who knows doesn't speak. So we could have asked him, if you know, then why did you speak? Since you spoke, therefore you must not know, according to your own philosophy. So to say that those who aren't following Krishna consciousness speak the loudest, and those who are following it don't speak, that's not always true. The proof is Prabhupada. How much he was speaking, how many books he has written. I mean, it could be true in some cases, but it's certainly not true in all cases. There are persons who are strictly following this process of Krishna consciousness very sincerely, who do a lot of preaching. That's a fact. See, we shouldn't think because somebody is, you know, speaking very boldly that they must be a hypocrite. Because only those who are sincere, they just walk around humbly and don't say anything. That's a Mayavadi. That's a trap of he who speaks doesn't know and he who knows doesn't speak. It's a Mayavadi trap if we think that way. I mean, it could be in some cases, but in many cases we see factually that there are persons who are very, very sincerely following this Krishna consciousness process and are preaching very vigorously all over the world. So if we are sincere in our own sadhana, in our own practice, then Krishna will guide us from within to whom we should associate with the most, who we should take the most seriously. You see, if we are strictly, sincerely trying to follow, then Krishna will guide us. Who are those devotees that you can trust the most to give the best possible guidance and inspiration? Krishna will give that intelligence within the heart. Yes.
Just to comment on that last point, mm-hmm. that's very important, because sometimes in our condition we may not recognize who is preaching and who is not preaching.
Yeah. So then what's the hope if one is so covered, you can't even distinguish who's giving the bona fide Krishna consciousness science and who's presenting pseudo-Krishna consciousness. And what's the hope for such a person? Well, it's like Prabhupada said, it's a matter of good fortune, actually. Because even like right now, there's so many, people can go to a Ratha Yatra festival, they can get a Back to Prabhupada magazine or Back to Godhead magazine. You know, and they could, whichever one they get, they may take it very seriously. So, what's going to determine which way they go? You see? One has to be fortunate, actually, to get the real sampradaya message. When it's good, it's a matter of good fortune, in one sense. It's also a matter of the sincerity of the candidate. Just like Prabhupada told Hayagriva, he says, you don't have to search for guru. When you're actually ready, when you're sincere, then the guru will find you out. So, the real key really boils down to one's own sincerity. You'll get what you're looking for. You'll get what you want. If you want to be cheated by pseudo-Krishna consciousness, that's what you'll get. If you're looking for genuine, pure Krishna bhakti, strictly according to Prabhupada's teachings, that's what you'll get. Krishna will bring you in contact with those devotees or devotees who can connect you purely with Prabhupada's teachings. And if you don't really want that, you're more interested in pseudo-bhakti and political bhakti, so-called political bhakti, then Krishna will facilitate you in that way. So we really have to be come to the pure platform, just like Prabhupada did. Well, he always was, but he showed by example that he simply stuck to the order to spread Krishna consciousness. That was the whole sum and substance of his existence. He didn't care about anything else. He just wanted to push forward Krishna consciousness because that's the order he was given. Anything else? So we thank you very much for your kind attention. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Hare Krishna.